to what I hope is the 31st episode of the 6th season of the Ubuntu podcast. I'm pretty sure it's Wednesday the 25th of September, and in this episode we're going to discuss what's been in the news. We'll also talk about the latest happenings in the Ubuntu community. If you're listening or watching live, you can send us messages using the chat facility on the website and in that old IRC channel. I'm Tony, and joining me this week are... Everybody's back together again. The four of us, the gruesome foursome. It's Alan.
We've got an extra visitor.
Right.
Danny Longlegs. Come and kill me.
Those of you watching on the webcam, I can't remember what I was trying to say there.
Mark's just here.
Mark's not very well tonight.
Hello.
Didn't bring his brain, but there
Mark's
you
brought his sexy voice to this party.
Oh, yeah.
And Laura's here as well.
Hello.
How you doing, Laura?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good, good, good. So, you got through two episodes without us then?
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah. That last episode, episode 30, whew, that was a corker. Wow. What an episode. People should really listen to that.
Yeah, they should try when it eventually is released.
It's quite peaceful.
Yeah, yes. Half an hour of pure bliss. Right. Well, seeing as we've been away, we should catch up with what's been going on, I guess.
Yes. And it's time for the news. And in our first item of news, some person has released some new OS. Ooh. Steam OS. No, indeed.
Excellent.
It's apparently a Linux-based OS for living room PCs by Valve, the people who make Steam.
Yeah. Okay. What's good about it?
Well, we don't know a lot, actually. It's only 48 hours since it was announced. We know a bit about it in that... there's been some promotional stuff on the Steam website. And Gabe Newell, the guy who runs Valve, has talked about it for a while. And there's been lots and lots of speculation, as there always is, about Valve products, that they're going to make a set-top box gaming console for the lounge. And this is the first step, making their own OS that goes on that set-top box. And it's Linux-based.
Cool.
Specifically so, Ubuntu-based.
I was going to say, is it a derivative of Ubuntu?
Yeah, based on Ubuntu 12.04. There's not a lot of detail out there, but there's a repository that people have been poking around in, and we've found packages for that came from 12.04.2. So, it's probably Ubuntu-based.
Cool. So, you can play games in your living room, but could it also replace, say, Myth TV?
It depends how locked down it is, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, they've
installed extra packages.
They've said they want it to be hackable, and they also announced today, 48 hours later, the second part of their announcement was that there's going to be Steam machines, these boxes, not just the OS, but the actual machines, that are made by various manufacturers. So it could be that someone integrates TV-like functionality into one of them, and whereas another lower-budget one doesn't. So potentially, it could, but... I'm not sure if that's their specific remit. It does talk about movies and music and stuff on the website. But I think that's more streaming services, pay for streaming services like
Netflix.
Netflix, Hulu, that kind of stuff. Mm. Less so, terrestrial TV and satellite and stuff like that. But I don't know. It's all, everyone's speculating a bit because we don't really know.
Mm. One cool thing they have said is that... we should watch for announcements in the coming weeks about all the AAA titles coming natively to SteamOS in 2014. What? So one of the things they've said is that it will be able to, as well as playing the games which have already been ported to Steam on Linux, it will be able to stream from, like, if you've got a load of Windows games, it will be able to stream from another PC onto your telly. But this is saying that, you know, they're going to actually be getting some of the games which so far have only been available for Windows and maybe for Mac are going to be natively on Linux as well.
Does that mean they'll be available natively for people who aren't using their Steam OS or boxes?
Well, presumably
that should be.
You're running, because it's just running on Steam on a PC, essentially. It just happens to be an interesting shape.
Mm. Mm. So, have they made any other announcements?
There's another one in 48 hours.
Oh.
So there's loads of speculation about what that third announcement will be. So the first one was the OS.
Is it a phone?
The second one was the box.
A phone.
And the third one, people are speculating that it might be a game that's been hotly anticipated, Half-Life 3, which people are speculating. It could be that, or it could be something else. Could be a new type of controller that goes with the Steam machines, or it could be some new service. it's all kind of up in the air, really. But there's wild speculation. At the point when SteamOS was announced 2 days ago, I on my Twitter client, I set it to follow SteamOS, and it was just moving too fast for me to read.
You were searching for
And mentions. The tweets were just coming in thick and fast. So yeah, there's a lot of people, you know, speculating and talking about this kind of stuff. So as is always the case with stuff Valve announced.
Yeah, interesting.
Cool.
Well, for those of you who are perhaps slightly less interested in games...
Graphics card news.
Would that be you, Tony?
No, I was fascinated by that. It sounded all very Victorian, all this talk about Steam devices.
Oh, bless.
Yeah. So NVIDIA have begun releasing some technical documentation for some aspects of its graphical processing units. It's basically its graphics cards. The release was made for the benefit of the Nouveau project, which was the project that a good few years ago now set out to try and write an open source driver for NVIDIA cards that was as good as, if not better, than the proprietary one that NVIDIA sometimes ship.
Well, to be fair, they do ship quite regularly, but the problem is it's proprietary, and so when things go wrong, there's no possible way that we can diagnose, you know, it's like something went wrong inside that blob, which is the NVIDIA driver.
Yes. And you end up using proprietary GUIs to configure it.
To manage and configure it, rather than like our cross-platform like configuration tools and stuff, but... Mm. And some people just don't like the idea of using proprietary, you know, drivers and software on their computer, and they would rather use free software.
Oh, it's definitely the right approach, but NVIDIA presumably haven't released this stuff before for a reason.
No, I think the last interaction, they caused a bad taste in open source software mouth collectively by...
There's a mental image I didn't need.
the original open source NVIDIA driver was called NV, predating Nouveau. Mm. And there was a contribution from NVIDIA back in the day where they asked the NV driver developers to pass it through some preprocessor that obfuscated things that NVIDIA thought might release some of their intellectual or reveal some of their intellectual property. So they were like very much the other end they used to be, and now, you know, they're opening up a bit and they're talking about developers joining the Nouveau mailing list and answering questions, and they've said, you know, we can't answer every question, there may be stuff we can't talk about, which, you know, is understandable.
Yes.
If there's, you know, intellectual property or patents around that or something like that, then you know, fair enough, but the fact they're opening up a bit is good.
Yeah, so watch this space, I guess. Maybe they just open source their own driver.
Yeah, I don't think that's ever gonna happen. We'll see
one day, Alan, maybe. Laura, what's next?
Ordnance Survey have released a Minecraft rendering of their OS open data. Which, I mean, I don't know much about Minecraft, but I was looking at the website and the whole OS open data thing seems really cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Mm. They had to manipulate the map a little bit to make it fit, because it's got all the contours of the country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I thought this would be fun, so I downloaded the map. It's a few hundred meg. And I stuck it on our home server, so the kids are going to get a bit surprised when they go to play Minecraft.
Their castle has been replaced by your house.
Yes, exactly. The castle has been replaced by the United Kingdom. but it's surprising. You can spot like landmarks pretty easily, even with no buildings on it. It's got the topography of the land, and it's got roads, major roads marked on it.
So what sort of scale is it on?
I'm not entirely sure. It's detailed on the website.
I think it's 100 kilometer blocks. Does that sound right? That sounds too specific.
No.
So I mean, about 8 blocks over the whole United Kingdom.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
The motorways, which are, you know, blue on a conventional map, are made out of diamond in there. And so they show up blue. And if you zoom out and look down, you can actually make out I flew from your house down here up to my house in Farnborough in Minecraft. Ah. I managed to figure out the route and which junction was which, because the roads are green and blue and yellow. And so, I could, you know, you can make out the lay of the land.
It would explain why you get home so quickly after a podcast.
Each block represents a ground area of 50 square meters.
Right. It's quite cool.
It is quite cool. So what do we know about OS open data then? Anybody?
Everyone looks at Laura because she was just talking about
I was reading the page before. I don't know. They've got a whole developer centre, which is quite cool, when you can get the data.
Because one of the reasons for OpenStreetMap is the fact that Ordnance Survey haven't been persuaded to release any of their stuff openly, but I was wondering whether this was a change.
There are videos on it, which I obviously can't look at now. something to do with Professor Nigel Shadbolt and Sir Tim Berners-Lee.
Ah, the Open Data Institute.
Mm.
Oh. The ODI.
So they're involved.
Interestingly, I saw on Google Plus, after posting these, Rich Wareham has written a Python tool to generate his own Minecraft maps, and he's been generating some, and also generating some more accurate ones that have buildings and structures in.
Oh, cool.
From his own photographs of the area.
Oh, cool.
Which is pretty cool. Yeah. Seems to be quite a popular thing. What the actual point of it? I think it's just illustrating the fact that the data is open.
Yeah.
It's not actually that useful to be able to walk around the UK in Minecraft.
No, but it gives it like a marketing angle, doesn't it?
It certainly does.
Right. Okay. So, Mark, next up is something about Synfig.
Oh, yes. This is a Kickstarter campaign. Two Kickstarter campaigns, in fact, for... one's a Kickstarter, one's an Indiegogo, for 2D animation tools.
Mm.
Apparently we don't have enough 2D animation tools that are open source. So these two projects, one of which I think is picking up on an abandoned open source project.
That's Pencil 2D is picking up on an abandoned project.
Right.
These ones, it's interesting. I was having a chat with Dave Jeffrey on IRC, who mentioned this to us, and gave us these links to talk about. One's called Synfig, and the other one is Tupi.
Yeah.
And they're both very popular, and he said there's a really good community within the 2D animation software open source arena, in that they collaborate with each other. They don't see each other as competition.
Yeah.
They work together.
That's
so
nice.
One of them, I think it was Tupi, was it, has had a donation from the Shuttleworth Foundation.
I think it was Synfig.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Synfig did, yes.
Right.
But yes, they're trying to raise some more money to finish their apps off and complete them a little bit better. So
the Shuttleworth Foundation is what?
It's a foundation that gives money to software projects, open source software projects.
Okay.
But largely educationally focused stuff,
yeah,
isn't
that's
it?
What mm-hmm. I thought.
Is that to do with Mark Shuttleworth?
It was started by him, yes.
Okay.
Seeded with money from him.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
So yeah, is that Shuttleworth?
Yes. Yeah. Well, people might not know.
Another interesting Kickstarter campaign, while we're talking about crowdfunding, which we seem to do a lot at the moment, is for a thing called the Peachy Printer.
It's this is cool.
£60 open source resin setting 3D printer.
Peachy.
Mm.
This was prototyped by a guy with some stuff he had laying around his house. He took apart a laser pointer and some bits of mirror and some bits of fishing line.
It's held together with elastic bands from the look of it.
It's brilliant.
It's interesting because it's different from the normal ones where they have plastic which is heated and melted and then squirted out like an inkjet into a 3D model.
Yeah.
This one has a liquid that drips down into a trough, and his software plays out through the sound card of the PC in order to direct a laser via two mirrors. So the left and right channels of the sound direct these two mirrors in order to direct the laser to heat a particular part of the resin in order to solidify it. And then more resin drops down from a reservoir above, and it slowly builds up by lasering the resin It's pretty impressive because it's real low tech,
and because it's using the sound card in the PC, it doesn't need an onboard microcontroller on the device, which means that it's literally just some mechanical bits, which keeps it really low cost.
And it uses the microphone port, I think, to detect how fast the water is dripping from the reservoir above, so it knows whether to speed it up or slow it down in order to fill the bottom reservoir up.
That is fantastic.
It's bonkers. When you see it working, it's like, wow.
It sounds very Heath Robinson.
Yes, it does. And it's $100, I think, is their marketing price
Canadian
point.
$100 Canadian dollars.
Yeah.
Which
is about £60.
And it's getting a lot of backing and looks like it should be available mid to late next year.
Wow.
Mm.
In a slightly more robust form?
Well, you can get them, I think if you pledge $100, you get it as a kit to put together yourself.
Right.
And if you pledge $400, you get it like pre-built. So I imagine that'll be a bit more robust, and you get like a load of resin with that as well to make stuff.
And if you pledge $600, you get an early one to beta test, and then you get a proper one later.
Oh, brilliant.
Oh, that's nice. Oh,
that's cool.
That's a good reward.
Yeah. Mm. Well, Google Plus have made the big, significant mark of 1 billion accounts.
Billion accounts.
It took Facebook 7 years to reach that number, apparently, so that's pretty good going, Google.
Yeah.
And in the last 3 months, they've added 500 million, so basically half that.
So what's happened in the last 3 months on Google
Plus? They wrote a good algorithm.
They made up 500 million user accounts at Google headquarters.
Well, part of it is they're kind of merging all the accounts together. So if you've got Gmail, you kind of get nudged towards Google Plus.
And YouTube as well.
If you've got a YouTube account, they try and get you to merge your personal account and your YouTube account and make a G Plus account.
So this isn't necessarily people using Google Plus, it's people having accounts.
Or actively, you know, going out there and saying, do you know what, I need a new social network. I think I'll join Google Plus.
Yeah.
Mm. Although, having said that, my brother said pretty much exactly that recently. He said to me, I've heard about this Google Plus. You know, I'm getting sick of Facebook. I quite like to try Google Plus. I nearly fell off my chair.
Maybe its time has come.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this data is from Google, from the Google Plus sitemap, and we can only believe it.
It's basically, someone downloaded the Google Plus sitemap and then sort of trawled it to work out how many profile pages there were and therefore how many accounts there were.
Although, to be fair, given I'm a moderator of a community, one of the biggest communities on Google Plus, which is Ubuntu, has 102,000 members in the community.
That's pretty good going.
I think that's bigger than Android, actually, or bigger than one of the Android communities, anyway. we get an awful lot of random, like, people spamming, like an awful lot,
right?
And these are genuine Google Plus accounts. Yeah, they have like real names and stuff, but they probably count towards that 1 billion.
Yeah,
but every morning when I go to that community, I have to go through and report and delete spam all the time. It's just so annoying.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of Ubuntu comments in the Ubuntu community on Google Plus. They just have really weird comments on it, and you just kind of think, how do you not appear in my stream, please?
Yes,
you can mute. I've just discovered.
Then you might as well not be in there in the first place.
Mm.
And that's the end of the news.
The Ubuntu podcast needs you. Yes, you. If you hear something that pleases, puzzles, or piques you, tweet us at UUPC or email podcast@ubuntu-uk.org. You can also talk to us on the telephone, Skype, Facebook, and Google+. Find links to all these places on our website, podcast.ubuntu-uk.org. And remember, if we don't hear from you, we might not have enough content. And that can only mean one thing, more quizzes.
And now it's time for the community news, including events, or event.
Just trips
was
off there, the
was
tongue
there.
Was
there something wrong with my introduction?
No.
Including events, or event.
Open parentheses, including events.
So, come on then, what's new in the community?
Juju now supports deploying Ubuntu to the Windows Azure cloud.
Okay.
That's good, isn't it? Being everywhere?
Yes.
Good.
Next up.
we really delved into that one.
Was this a big effort then? Did it take a lot of work and effort to try and get this to happen?
Do you know, it's one of those behind-the-scenes kind of conversations that happens between people like Mark and people of his kind of level at Microsoft. I don't think it's one of those things where, you know, an engineer says, oh, let's make this work. I think it's kind of a high-level conversation that probably happened some time ago, and it's been building and building, and now it's available.
So does this mean that somebody can go up to Azure, the cloud hosting thing, and go, I'd like an Ubuntu box, click a button, and then...
Well, they could already do that. Yeah. Oh. But this is now with Juju, you can say, I want to deploy my whole virtual infrastructure and I want to have it on Amazon, and I want to move it to Windows because there's a storm over Amazon's data center.
Right.
So,
okay.
So, for example, if you're a startup company, there's Microsoft will give heavy discounts for using Azure. So to try to incentivize startups to use their infrastructure.
Hmm.
So you could do that, but you might find that your developers are actually Unixy style Linuxy people rather than Windowsy people, and they might be more familiar and more happy with running stuff like your app written in Ruby on Ubuntu,
yes,
which is cool and everything, but you're running on Windows Azure. So you bring the two together, Ubuntu on Azure, and then if your app is like really super scalable and needs to scale out to 1,000 nodes, you can Juju deploy, you know, to 1,000 nodes, and away it goes.
So really, the fact that it's on Windows Azure rather than as opposed to Amazon, it shouldn't make any difference to the end user.
That's exactly the point. And also, as Mark says, it allows you to move things around. So not just, you know, for to work against problems on a particular provider. So, you know, like say Amazon are having an outage, so you move everything across to HP's cloud or you shift it across to Azure. But also a bit of redundancy, you know, so you're not... or haven't got all your eggs in one basket. So if Amazon does go down, you've still got some capacity somewhere else, and then you can scale that up.
Right.
Or whatever.
Yeah, sounds good. Cool. Well done, everybody. Yeah. What's next, Alan?
Typecatcher is a tool for installing Google fonts. I have no idea what this is about.
So, you know, Google have this archive of free web fonts, which you can include in your website, which are all like open licensed. So this is a tool which someone's released, which will basically... grab the list of fonts off the website and let you install them locally at the click of a button. Ooh. So you can have all these fancy fonts.
That's rather cool.
Yes.
I'm surprised there wasn't a button that you could press to say download this font.
I think there is a, like, you can go through the Google site and you can download it. But the way they're designed to be used is just there's a JavaScript tag which you embed.
Right.
So this is a sort of built-in font manager thing which looks all nice and Ubuntu-y and just installs it directly in.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah.
Cool.
Sounds good. And in the not about Ubuntu, Fedora is 10 years old.
Great.
Wow.
Yeah, well done, Cinder Fedora.
Yeah. So it doesn't seem that long ago since it was running around in nappies.
Yeah.
Falling over all over the place, crying. the analogy might be running a little thin now.
Yes.
But yeah, well done.
Fedora Core in those days, of course.
It was, wasn't it? Yeah, I've forgotten that.
What was the last Red Hat version before Fedora Core? Was it 8? Or 9. Red Hat 9, and then it went Fedora, didn't it?
Yeah.
Wow. That was a long time ago.
And then it went RHEL. Red Hat Enterprise Linux. Yeah. Mm. And Red Hat itself kind of went away. Yeah. Well, congratulations to the Fedora community for keeping at it.
Yes. Have a piece of cake.
For 10 long years, despite all of the obstacles in their way.
Like other fine open source operating systems coming along.
Yes. Excellent. And we've got one big, fantastic event to tell you about this time round.
Tell us all about it, Mark.
Me?
Yeah. Yes.
All right, then. It's OggCamp. We might have mentioned it before. We've got all sorts of stuff to tell you. So it's happening, if you haven't already gathered, it's happening on the 19th and 20th of October, which is just under a month, at Liverpool John Moores University, which is in Liverpool.
Yep.
And you don't... have to pay, but you do have to book a ticket. Well, you don't have to book a ticket. We'd like you to book a ticket so we know you're coming.
Please book a ticket.
Go to ogcamp.org, and there is a page called Tickets where you can book a ticket.
We've booked tickets, haven't we?
Yes, we have booked tickets.
Good.
And the tickets are free. You can get a free ticket for no money at all whatsoever. But if you fancy donating a little bit of money just to help the event run smoothly and provide us with some of the bits and bobs that we need, then you can donate any amount of money, so like 2p maybe, or up to £1 million.
Don't bother with 2p because it probably won't actually register. Eventbrite will probably just swallow it up.
Okay.
But you can upwards, would be very much appreciated.
Give us a few quid if you appreciate it. It goes to running the cost of the events. Mm. It is not profit making. None of us get paid. We all just try to cover our costs.
That's not what Dan told you.
Yeah, I think that's important because it takes a lot of time and a lot of effort. We do this for fun.
Yes. Or something.
Yeah.
The fun bit is about Saturday night, I think, and that's it.
Yeah, and we don't make it. We all pay our own way to get there and pay our own hotel and stuff. We don't take any of the funds to do that. It all goes on making the event.
Yes. So over 300 tickets have already been picked up by people, and there'll be more even in the last couple of weeks. So basically, get along now while you still can.
Yes, and book some accommodation because it'll probably be being snapped up by hungry Og campers.
Yes.
So tell me about the speakers, Mark.
The speakers. Well, we've got, as we've had in the last few years, we've got a one scheduled track and lots of unscheduled tracks. So on the scheduled track this year, we have Barney Brown, who's doing a talk called Inside the Intercontinental Music Lab. You might remember Barney Brown.
Yes, we interviewed him. Yes.
So he's going to be telling us the story
of how the Intercontinental Music Lab came about. Okay. And a bit about making, you know, making and releasing Creative Commons music and what's involved.
Cool.
Freaky Clown is going to be doing a talk called How I Rob Banks and Why You Should Be Scared.
Already scared.
Yes, excellent. I was scared before I even knew the talk title.
Yes, so he did a very intriguing image forensics talk a couple of years ago. Mm. So if you enjoyed that, I'm sure you'll enjoy this. We've got Javier Ruiz from the Open Rights Group. I probably butchered that. Who's doing a talk?
No, I think it is Open Rights Group. I think that is.
Sure, on PRISM and mass surveillance, a turning point. Oh, there's sort of abstracts for all of these talks. If you want to know a bit more about them on the website, there's a bit more detail about the content of the talks.
Cool.
And Gary Smales is doing a talk on open publishing, a call to arms, where he's looking at the book publishing process and. Why he thinks it's important that we take a more open approach to writing, editing, publishing books, and you know, why the current system might be a bit broken.
Cool. So those are the big speaker names that we know about. Yes. But there are other activities going on the main track as
yes,
well, aren't there?
Yes, we're going to have lightning talks. Lightning talks last year, I sort of did them because there are a bunch of people standing around saying, are there going to be some lightning talks? So I thought, why not? Yeah. So that was ridiculously popular and a lot of fun. So we're going to do that on the main stage this year. There's going to be a half-hour session of lightning talks.
Cool.
Which are going to be 5 minutes long, and you're allowed one question.
Right. So six talks.
Right, so it's definitely going to be 5 minutes long and one question.
One question.
Yeah. We're not going to confuse it by changing the location, the duration, the number of questions, or anything like that.
Or
last
hesitation
year.
Or right. deviation.
It was a lot of fun last year.
It was, yes. Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah.
And there's going to be a live show.
Yay!
We're going to be standing up, or sitting down maybe, and talking about stuff. I don't think we're going to do a quiz.
No
quiz. Okay.
No quiz.
I thought about it.
So that's going to be
momentarily.
There's going to be a combination of some of us and some of Linux Outlaws. We're not sure exactly who yet. We'll see. See what happens
on the day.
Basically.
On the day. Yeah. Excellent.
And there's going to be a raffle.
Yay!
Yes,
we've got some great prizes. I'll tell you about one of those in a moment.
Yeah, we've got some definitely cool stuff. So our traditional Rafflecast rounds off the weekend.
With Alan running up and downstairs.
Yeah, yeah. But yes. The most important thing to bear in mind is that it is on conference. Although we have a scheduled main track, we need lots of people to come along and talk about stuff.
Yeah.
If you've got anything educating or interesting or just plain bizarre that you want to tell somebody about.
It can be absolutely anything to do with software, hardware, politics, art, ideas, weird things you did at the weekend, you know.
Right, so anything then, pretty
anything.
Much.
Okay. Anything which you think might be of interest to other people like you.
And you can just turn up on the weekend and volunteer that as a talk, and people will say, yes, I'd like to see that, and then you'll get a room to do it in.
Yes, there is a talk guidelines page on the website. If you check that out, that explains a bit about how to submit a talk and what your talk should contain and what you should prepare, that sort of thing.
Fab. Okay, and there are some sponsors
that
we have to thank.
There are some very kind sponsors who we'd like to thank because they basically cover the cost of the event and make sure that it can happen. So, first of all, we have LJMU Open Labs, who once again have given us the venue.
Yep.
Which is great because that's a huge thing we don't have to sort out or
Indeed.
Pay for.
Indeed. It's a great venue as well. Really open, modern, all the tech, the kit there works. It's brilliant.
Yes. So if you see anyone from Open Labs at the weekend, do shake them by the hand and buy them a coffee or something.
Yes.
Bitemark, once again, have stepped up to sponsor us. I think that's every year.
Yeah, every year
sponsored
so far.
Us. Yes. So if you need a VPS or some hosting, get it from Bitemark.
Indeed.
And we are supported by Ubuntu, supported by Canonical.
Hooray!
So that's nice of them, isn't it?
Yeah. This is from donations from the Ubuntu community.
Fab.
Yeah.
Excellent.
No, so, not from Fab.
Not from Fab, no. I bet Fab doesn't donate to the Ubuntu community.
Do you not think so?
I donate something, I'm sure.
Yeah. But so the Ubuntu community are helping...
Vitriol.
I was going to say, you can't buy stuff with Vitriol.
The Ubuntu community is helping OggCamp happen, which is really cool.
And not only that, the OggCamp community is helping OggCamp happen.
Indeed.
Because we've...
Yeah, this is brilliant.
This is brilliant. Our Pay What You Want tickets have been so successful that I think, in fact, we've got that they are our biggest sponsor, if you don't count the cost of the venue.
Yeah. Biggest monetary cash, if you like.
Biggest monetary sponsor is the people who are coming, which is amazing. Yeah. So thank you very much, everybody who is coming, whether you paid or not, in fact.
And finally, Transitive, who are an open source monitoring company. They helped support the event last year and are back this year for more. They have donated a particularly nice prize for the raffle, which is a Nexus 7.
Yes, a new Nexus 7.
A new,
if you liked the Nexus 7 they donated last year, you're going to love the Nexus 7 they donated this year.
They are nice.
Nexus 7 Part 2, this time it's even Nexusier.
And if you think you're going to win, sit at the back of the room.
Yes.
Yeah. There is an exhibition and an open hardware jam going on during the weekend. So if you're interested in showing off about your project or group or have some sort of cool piece of hardware that you want to demonstrate, just contact us at dan@sixgun.org or contact the podcast and we can get the message through. Or if you've got anything you want to give away on the in the raffle, you can give that to us as well.
Cool.
So yeah, there we go. Come along to Odd Camp. It's in not very long amount of time. It's going to be awesome. And Some/none/all of us will be there. Buy us a beer. Thank you very much for listening. That's all for this episode. We will be back next time when we're going to be interviewing a very, very nice man whose name is currently being pasted into the Word document that I'm looking at, but not quite quick enough.
It's just all gone wrong. I think I'd insert
Alan,
switched on.
Can you
Neklesh.
Neklesh, who's an Ubuntu Touch developer working on apps. He's going to be telling us all about that and the app competition that's going on at the moment. We'll be reading your feedback out and making your life just a little bit easier with some command line love. So thank you very much indeed for listening, and it's a bit warm in here. Sorry for some of the giggles. I should explain that Mark has been scared by a very small insect for most of this podcast.
It's quite large, in fact.
It's not that large. It is, in fact, smaller than you.
Well, that kind of goes without saying.
Right. Well, hopefully we'll get rid of it by the next episode, but no promises. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Bye.